extreme. Still, I love it, and I'll keep the dream that someday, though maybe not this year, my Hudson River will once again run clear. Down the valley, 1 million toilet chains find my Hudson so convenient place to drain. And each little city says, who, me? Do you think that sewage plants come free? Out in the ocean, they say the water's clear. Turns to me, sailing up my dirty stream. Still I love it, and I'll dream that someday, though maybe not this year, my Hudson River and my country will run clear.
This is WBAI in New York. We next hear Tom Stokes on Earth Day.
It's Tom Stokes. Good afternoon. I'm glad to participate with you with this carnival. Carnivals are very good to have every once in a while. But let's not lose perspective in what this is all about. While we're all here standing around grooving each other, saying, isn't this beautiful? Let's remember that something is very wrong out there. And we're very upset. And the world is dying. And we're not going to let it die. Let us also remember that right now, today, up at the Coliseum, there's a little convention going on. Do you know what this convention is about? I'll tell you what it's about. It's the packaging industry, man. It's the representatives of the packaging industry from all around this country. They're in there discussing ways of new packaging material and how to put upon us more packaging material. That's the source of our trash pollution. That's the packagers. Let's not orient ourselves always to how to get rid of this packaging material. Let's how to get rid of the trash. Let's orient ourselves at the source of the trash. There's a picket going on there right now. And when I'm through speaking, I'm going to join that picket. I don't want to cut into any of the other speakers here, but I hope that each and every one of you sometime today will take a visit up to the Coliseum and let the packaging industry know that you're not very happy about how they're going about their business. As the other speakers have said, and as I'm re-emphasizing, when we're talking about our environment, man, we're talking about the total environment. We're talking about people relating to other people. We're talking about 38 cigarettes a day that each of us is consuming just by standing right here. You know where 80% of those 38 cigarettes a day come from? They come from the automobile. The automobile is 80% of the pollution here. And while we're all grooving this automobile-free car, let's remember that we have the automobile to stay as long as the state government, as long as the federal government, as long as the local government continue to subsidize the automobile with their highway programs and with their tax structure and with their oil depletion allowance. If our government was interested in the people and in what was best for the people, this money would instead be going into decent mass transportation. They would not be spending millions of dollars on the supersonic transport. We don't need a supersonic transport. We don't care if it takes 8 hours instead of 5 hours to fly to London. What we want is a decent mass transportation in this city. This is what we're for. And we're not gonna just come and groove each other and then say, all right, people, we've told you where we're at, now you go and do your thing and we have confidence. Our job begins tomorrow and the day after tomorrow. And we're gonna continue to apply pressure every way we can. And let's remember one other thing, that when we're talking about pollution and ways of solving pollution, we're talking about the very basis of where this crap is coming from. We're talking about industries that are out to make money for themselves. We're people-oriented, and we want this world to be livable for us, all of ourselves. And it's not just people, it's the animals. 360 species of animals have decided that this world is no longer fit for, and they've gone extinct. We don't want to go extinct, and we don't want any more of those animals to go extinct. Just like we don't want the North Vietnamese people to go extinct. The United States has 6% of the world's population. This 6% of the world's population controls 60% of the world's resources. And we are trying to get this even more so. We are oriented toward consumption. We are oriented toward waste. We are oriented toward goods that we don't need, that decompose, that don't last. How many TV commercials have you seen that ask you to buy things you really need? Very few. The commercial economy that we have today is orienting ourselves for needs, for wants that we don't really need. People tell us about gross national product and how this is so vitally important, how we need to increase our gross national product. But increasing gross national product, if it doesn't reach the basic needs of human beings, decent housing, unadulterated food, is nowhere, man. People say it's their problem. It's the industries. It's the corporations. It's the military industrial complex that got us this problem. It's they that augment this problem. It's their fault. Why not have these people solve these problems, a lot of people say. It's their problem. I sympathize with this point of view, but however, a lot is happening before there's any kind of political revolution. And we must not absolve our personal responsibilities. But there's another kind of revolution that I want to address myself to very briefly, and that's the cultural revolution that we see all about us. The young people that saying, hey man, I don't dig your lifestyle because your lifestyle is hostile to the environment all around us. And to these people, instead of saying that they live a negative life with unpositive attitude toward the system we have, I think that perhaps these people are really where it's at. And one last thing I want to say. A lot of people say, who are we to be shouting out about these environmental abuses that we see around us? We're not experts. We don't have the degrees and the experience in government to dealing with all the intricate facets of this problem. But it's these same people, man, that told us that we weren't experts on Vietnam, and therefore we had no right to talk about what was wrong about Vietnam. All we're talking about is respect for other individuals, respect for other lives, and respect for humanity as a whole. Thank you very much.
Our next speakers are members of the National Welfare Rights Organization. There are three, and I'm not sure which one's going to speak. They are Mrs. Shirley McNeil from Baltimore, Mrs. Audrey Williams from Pittsburgh, and Mr. George Wiley, who who's executive director of the National Welfare Rights Organization in Washington.
We in the National Welfare Rights Organization, which is an organization of poor people, people who are black, who are brown, who are Indian, who are white, people who are struggling to change the oppressive economic and social conditions that affect them, we are involved in a serious movement to deal with some of the oppressive conditions in this country. We are concerned about the environmental movement. We are concerned about your movement because we think that it is a dangerous movement if it is not prepared to deal with some of the serious political and economic and social problems that are directly related, to the way our economy and our society deals with black people and deals with poor people. We are concerned about whether this ecology movement is going to be a serious political movement. We are concerned about whether this ecology movement is prepared to take on the major issues that it is going to have to grapple with if it is going to be anything less than a fad, a cop-out, and a waste of the time and energies and the resources that could be better spent in other ways. We are concerned because we know that the problem of ecology and environment is a serious and indeed a fundamental problem, a problem relating to the survival of the human race. But we who have been involved in a life and death struggle for the survival of black people and of poor people in this country have looked to many of you for assistance in that struggle, and you have not been there. We are concerned that if this movement is to be a serious movement, it must confront the corporations that are the ones that are polluting the atmosphere, the rivers, and indeed the lives of all of us in many ways. We are concerned that if this movement is to be a serious movement, it must deal with the problem of overconsumption and the problem of the fact that the United States of America, which is 6% of the population of the world, consumes more than 50% of the total non-renewable resources that are produced in the world. We are concerned that this movement not be a movement which takes resources away from poor people, that takes resources and energies away from ending racism and poverty, but that this movement be a movement which is concerned about the ecology of all people, that is concerned about the ecology of the ghettos and barrios of our country, that is concerned about the issues of race and poverty, without which it is not possible to deal with some of the other problems with which you and the ecology movement seem so obsessed. I want to come and ask you here today, as we will be asking people in the environment movement across the country, if you are going to ask poor people to be the ones to pay for changes or for programs designed to clean up the air and to clean up the city. I want to argue that if you are, you are going to be unsuccessful in part because there is going to be struggle and resistance from poor people who do not intend to be brutalized by you any more than we intend to be brutalized by the rest of this society. I want to say that many of the moves to force Con Edison, or the power companies, or the businesses to clean up the air, many of the costs may be passed on to poor people, passed on to the consumers in a form that is essentially regressive taxation, where poor people bear the cost disproportionately to those people who are better off. We are concerned that there is a need to cut down the overconsumption and thereby to cool off the economy and the economic growth. But at the same time, we know if that is done without an emphasis on creating new jobs, jobs that are not wasteful, jobs that do not create pollution, and above all, unless there is a major demand on the part of this ecology movement for a guaranteed adequate income for every citizen, so that instead of having an over-consuming upper middle class, we begin to put some resources into the hands of the people who can't consume the basic necessities of life. Unless you make a guaranteed adequate income and the provision of jobs in the human sector a major goal and demand, you will be contributing to an increase in the oppression of poor people and in the oppression of black people in this country. Finally, many of you I know are concerned about population increase. And that concern gets directed towards stamping out the population of black people, towards stamping out the population of colored people throughout the world, and towards stamping out the population of poor people at home and abroad. I want to say that unless you are prepared to seriously put a priority on helping poor people survive in this country, unless you are deeply concerned and committed to helping colored people, black and brown and red and yellow, survive throughout the world, your movement is going to play into the hands of the imperialists, is going to play into the hands of the power structures, and be the tool of oppression for minorities here at home and throughout the world. I want to say that I hope this movement is not simply a fad. I want to say I hope this movement is not going to be a cop-out, but so far, the signs have not been encouraging. So far, you have not put an emphasis on dealing with the oppression of black people in this country. So far, you have not put an emphasis on dealing with the problems of the slum environments of poor people throughout the country. So far, you have not put an emphasis and putting your shoulders and your efforts and your resources to the wheel of supporting a guaranteed adequate income for every citizen in this country, an immediate end to the war in Vietnam, an immediate end to imperialism of the United States throughout the world, an immediate change in the misuse of our resources, and an emphasis on controlling consumption and of using our resources to see to it that people can survive here in this country and throughout the world. Thank you.
I want to talk to you about mass transit and what we must and can do to relieve the enormous problem that affects the city of New York and every other urban area.
This is Congressman Edward Koch.
The federal government since 1956 has spent more than $45 billion on highways and less than $1 billion on mass transit. And that is a priority that's got to be reversed. And the monies that have been spent on highways have now got to be addressed to the problem of the city. And the key problem in that area is mass transit. And so I'd urge you to get in touch with your congressman now, this week. Why? Because the highway lobby is seeking to extend the Highway Trust Fund, which now ends in 1972, they want to extend it for another 4 years. If you want to stop it, if you want to have those desperately needed funds going into mass transit, you have got to stop the highway barons from extending their legislation. A second area of legislation that deserves your consideration, and that has to do with this city and with the federal government, and that is to ban gasoline that has lead in it. There isn't any reason why we have to have lead gasoline. There is a company that's been making unleaded gasoline for 30 years, and there isn't any reason why the city of New York has to wait for the federal government to do something about it. The city of New York has 20,000 vehicles or more. They now use 21 million gallons of leaded gasoline annually, more than that. There isn't any reason why the city of New York ought not to immediately say that it will not buy for the city vehicles gasoline which has lead in it, that it will only buy unleaded gasoline. Now I want to bring you to another aspect of how you control pollution. And that is that where the civil deterrents, the civil penalties don't work, and I fear that they do not, then you include in our laws criminal deterrents. When the polluters, when the industrial polluters, and I'm talking now about the officers and the directors of the great corporations, if they were brought home to the fact that they cannot continue to pollute and simply pay fines of $10,000 or even $50,000 when brought into court, which they consider to be a license to turn the atmosphere and the waterways into sewers, if they are advised that when they pollute, when their great corporations pollute, that there will be criminal penalties and that they will go to jail for it, we will see a change in their attitude. Because when it becomes a question of an industrial director or officer of one of the great corporations facing the fact that if he violates the anti-pollution laws, he will go to jail for 15 days, that will then be the deterrent. And there's something that you can do in your daily lives, because it isn't always a question of what's Jack doing and what's the polluter doing. It's what you are doing. If you stop using the detergents and you use the soaps, and if you stopped using aluminum foil, and if you stopped using the package, the plastic containers that are not disposable, you will have done part of the job. And then just to conclude on one very important note, there are those who believe that in some way our addressing ourselves to the problem of preventing pollution is going to turn us away from and turn us off the anti-Vietnam War positions which we have. We will not be stopped on that issue because they are tied together. Those people who pollute are causing deaths, tens of thousands of deaths. And those people who are urging on that war and continuing that war in Vietnam are also causing tens of thousands of deaths. Since the president announced that he was going to end that war in some fashion, back in June of last year, more than 8,000 young Americans have died in Vietnam. And it was shocking to hear the president last night, and I'm just going to quote him, that is on Monday night when he made his recent speech, he said, and I quote him, "I'm glad to be able to report tonight that in the first 3 months of 1970, the number of Americans killed in action dropped to the lowest first quarter level in 5 years." And I close quote. The fact is that he demonstrates that he looks at this war like a balance sheet, not like a war which involves deaths of young men. And until we see that the people in Washington and the president see that every death is a personal tragedy for every family in this country, and until we see that, there won't be an end. And that's why we've got to press forward. Thank you.
Tony Mazzocchi of the Oil, Atomic, and Chemical Workers Union.
It is significant that this festival of life is being held in New York City.
We cry out for law and order, but accept environmental crime of such magnitude that it would take an ecological Nuremberg-type trial just to examine the facts. And that is precisely what is necessary if man is to survive. Let us examine the workplace environments of the giant industries across the water in New Jersey. You will find that the very corporations which make their headquarters here in New York City and which
can
make
I,
pious expressions of
can
concern
I interrupt you, fellas?
For the environment are the same ones that mobilize large lobbies to fight enactment of legislation what? Which would correct the pollution of the industrial environment. They are also the same industries that are major contributors to the degradation of the air and water. The problem of industrial environmental pollution is inseparable to that of pollution to the community at large. There is violence being inflicted upon all of us, and there aren't any environmental policemen around. There are no meaningful requirements for disclosure, and there's no accountability. We allow industry to play roulette with our very
existence. This is Bill Schechner at 14th Street, and Tony Mazzocchi, who is the public relations man and shaker and breaker for the Oil, Atomic, and Chemicals Workers Union, is talking about industrial pollution in the oil and chemical plants in New Jersey.
Judging from the many hundreds of accidents involving oil tankers, can we any longer tolerate a situation where any corporate entity can introduce technology without regard to its possible consequences? Should not the community be consulted about decisions that affect its very existence? I suggest that the first step toward community control of the environment be instituted here in the city of New York. I suggest that an ecological police force be created, that it contain individuals competent in all the disciplines necessary to deal with the total environment. This force would have the responsibility of doing environmental detective work, a complete inventory of the pollutants that are introduced into the environment must be compiled, and full disclosure made as to their source. The community has a right to know about lead poisoning of its ghetto children, about high carbon monoxide counts in apartment houses, about what really is in the sludge that's dumped off the harbor. The community has a right to know the facts about their total environment, ranging from the workplace to the community at large. There will be much rhetoric on this Earth Day from every conceivable source. Everyone wishes to be identified with being against pollution.